Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in San Francisco to speak with Charles Hamilton of Locked On Warriors about the Steph Curry injury, Draymond Green injury, D'Angelo Russell injury, and the future of the Warriors for this season. We'll then go to speak to Mike Richmond of Locked On Blazers about Portland's inefficient start to the season and their big man woes with injuries to Zach Collins and Hassan Whiteside. And then lastly, we go to Toronto to check in with the reigning champions and Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors about Pascal Siakam's beginning to the season. It's all coming up. The biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast and the lead fantasy analyst of BasketballMonster.com and Yahoo Sports Australia. The NBA has thrown up some weird and wonderful situations, injuries, teams struggling, lots of big changes across some marquee teams. We're going to talk about that in today's show, so let's get to it. Now I'm joined by the co-host of the Locked On Warriors podcast, Charles Hamilton, is here with me. It is a very, very different situation for Golden State this year. Charles, you've been on the podcast plenty of times all the way through into June as we're talking NBA Finals. Probably not going to be the case this year as things are going horribly wrong in Golden State. Of course, we know last week Steph Curry broke his hand and is going to be out for a very, very long time, but also some other injuries across the weekend, Charles, with Draymond Green and D'Angelo Russell. We'll talk about Steph soon, but let's talk about the Draymond injury with the finger ligament situation. How serious is this for Draymond? Is it a case of him just sort of kicking back and taking it easy while these other guys are out? Is it a significant long-term problem? Where are we at with Draymond and his finger?
It's a short-term thing. I think it's something you're going to see throughout the entire season where, you know, Draymond is always quote-unquote played banged up. Well, I think we'll see a lot of times this season where he's banged up and he's just not going to play. I don't think it's serious. He said he'll be back soon. So I imagine it's a term we coined on the last Locked On Warriors. It's tank adjacent. And I think this move is a tank adjacent one where it's, do you have an ailment? Do you have something wrong? Okay, it's probably better if you sit out. And they've also mentioned that he's going to be limited to a certain number of games and certain number of minutes. So I think it's all related to that. But it doesn't seem like it's anything that's going to affect him long term. I mean, you saw in the first game he hurts his elbow. In like the third game he hurts his back. And now it's the finger. So I think these are just ailments that he usually would play through. But for now, we're not going to be seeing him play through them.
That's the way that I see it as well. There's no need to push through things that would normally sit you out in this sort of situation. Obviously, this Warriors team is really struggling, but I do find it humorous, Charles, that you probably don't find it that humorous, but I do find it humorous. Warriors are going to sit everyone out to tank now because they want the draft picks. Like, they were losing anyway. Like, when these guys were playing, they were getting killed in every game. So it's not like they actually need the help to lose these games because they were getting destroyed in these games that Curry was playing, that Draymond was playing, that Russell was playing. Yes, they were without Kevon Looney, but Curry's gone now. They don't need any extra help to lose. They're going to be struggling to win regardless. So this is not as brazen. It's more about long-term preservation of guys like Green with his finger because it's not making them lose more games, I don't believe, because they just don't have NBA quality rotation guys on this squad, and that's something we talked about in the offseason as well. D'Angelo Russell's ankle injury kept him out over the weekend. That's probably even less serious than Green's injury, I would guess.
Yeah. With Draymond, you saw when these injuries happened. With D'Angelo, I don't remember him tweaking his ankle or anything. I'm not saying that it's just they're completely lying, but I never saw him tweak his ankle. I would imagine he'll be back tomorrow. I don't even know. That one was the biggest surprise. Yeah, Draymond, you kind of saw it coming. They had reasons to sit him out. D'Angelo was definitely a surprise to me.
So, the Warriors, obviously, that one win for the season and a lot of other, not even just losses, but quite bad losses so far this season for them. But let's look at it from, I guess, a more of a positive perspective, because it's getting a lot of these young guys more of an opportunity to play. The rookies from this year, Jordan Poole and Eric Pascal, have been starting, and it looks like Poole's going to be that starter for Steph Curry for most of this season. Pascal started for Draymond Green. We've got guys like Kai Bowman, two-way players, coming in and playing a ton of minutes because there's no other point guard, or there was no other point guard active. Yeah. Across the weekend. So if from a positive perspective of trying to develop these youngsters, what have you seen that has impressed you with that group of young guys, you know, first or second year players?
Well, so my priorities personally, at least what I think the Warriors' priority should be, is to showcase D'Angelo Russell, try and build up as much trade value as possible. Or, you know, maybe you decide he's just a piece of the Warriors moving forward. Either way, you try and build up his value. And then the next one is develop players. Because if you can find 3 to 4 role players that you feel comfortable with playing, you know, in the rotation maybe every night next season, when you have Steph, Draymond, and Clay back, and a top pick, and potentially D'Angelo Russell or whatever you can get for D'Angelo Russell, that will be huge because of the cost control, because of their youth and athleticism, because there were times over the last 3 years where, even though they were so top-heavy, they were a little older. They didn't have the young athleticism that some of these guys have. And one of the brightest spots over the first week is Eric Pascal. To me, throughout a week of gameplay, I think they've already found one rotation player for every single night for this season and next season and just moving forward. Jordan Poole, he's had his ups and downs, but if he can become just a three-point specialist off the bench, that would be huge. But he does have more potential past that. Jacob Evans' injury right now is too bad because he would be getting a lot of minutes with Steph being out, but he's another guy that you would hope to develop. Kai Bowman he's had some bad moments, but he was pretty good last night. He impressed me, and I don't know if it was a surprise he went undrafted, but he was definitely a draftable player. So, and I know the Warriors like him as well. On that two-way contract, we'll see what happens because, you know, with all these injuries, once he hits 45 days, there's nothing they can do. But, you know, they'll get reinforcements at some point. And then even with a guy like Alan Smilagic, who's injured right now, you have the luxury of, all right, well, we're not especially trying to win games. Winning games isn't our focus this year. We can develop him in the NBA now. We don't have to keep him down in the G League for the entire season. We can see what he might. Maybe you just throw him into the fire and maybe he survives, or maybe you realize he's a 19-year-old who needs more seasoning, so to speak.
I think one thing we have found out over these first week or this first week and a half is that Marquese Chris isn't actually good, and that preseason showing was just that, because even in times where the Warriors are needing big men, like, his minutes have been cut right back down, and you could see him being a guy that is waived if they do want to convert one of these two-way guys, because that's really the only option they've got to get those guys like Bowman or Damian Lee, who's been playing really well for this team on the wing. Yeah, to get them onto the roster, they have to convert them, but the only non-guaranteed guy is Chris. When's his guaranteed date? I think it's in January from memory.
Yeah, January. I know it was January 7th last year, so sometime early January. And I mean, that is my prediction, that Damian Lee is going to end up taking his spot or someone else's spot, because that's the other thing that they have the ability to do this year is, you know, who knows if any of these guys actually have the value, but let's say Alec Burks plays well. Can you recoup some of those second round picks you lost recently with a guy like Alec Burks, or a team needed a big man with Willie Cauley-Stein? So there's going to be some movement on this roster throughout the season. So whether it's Marquese Chris, which most likely, but also potential trades trying to recoup draft assets, I could see that as well.
So that is going to be interesting to see how this all works out. A quite different situation for the Warriors this year. Charles, and you and your new co-host over on Locked On Warriors will have it all covered for us during the season. So you and Wes, formerly of Locked On Heat, will have it all covered for us over on Locked On Warriors.
Yes, sir. Wes just started with the Warriors on Friday, or Locked On Warriors, excuse me. He's the new beat writer for the Mercury News for the Warriors, and he's going to give us access like we've never had before. You mentioned it. He used to do Locked On Heat. The guy is locked in with the NBA. So, I mean, we're ecstatic to have him and just access like we've never had before. But I feel bad that, you know, his first season is this one. But we'll have plenty of development and things to talk about for sure.
There's definitely going to be stuff to talk about. It's just going to be a completely different group of things to talk about than what it has been over the past 5 seasons. Charles, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
Manscaped is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. Now let's bring in the host of the Locked On Blazers podcast. Mike Richmond is here to talk to me about the Portland Trail Blazers, who, I don't know how do we describe the start to the season for the Blazers? They're 3-3 at the moment. Some injuries, Mike. How have you seen the start of the year for Portland so far?
I would call it a tepid nightmare.
Okay, fair enough. That's it's quite descriptive.
Yeah, it's been bad because they don't have any power forwards on the roster, and they already lost a guy that they had shoehorned into playing power forward. 39-year-old Pau Gasol, who had foot surgery in May, is still recovering. They just don't have enough big guys. Zach Collins is going to be out for 3 months. They are just they're scrambling right now for answers, and I think this has really shifted quickly from a team that was talking about championships in early September to a team that's talking about making the playoffs at this point.
Yeah, look, when we spoke in the offseason, we talked about the changes that they'd made, and there was potential criticisms moving away from Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu to go with a more offensive-centered situation, starting Rodney Hood, putting a center in Zach Collins over there at power forward, and of course Collins with the dislocated shoulder is going to be out for this period of time. They've been starting Anthony Tolliver in his place. Last game, though, it was Mario Hezonja who started there as Tolliver started at center with Whiteside injured. Thankfully, Whiteside and Hood are likely to be back next game. Hood suffered a knee knock that they're weirdly calling a quad contusion. But, you know, that player of Hezonja there at power forward, is it just going to be, let's just play the matchups, we'll put Labissiere in there, we'll get Tolliver in there, we'll get Hezonja in there, or do you think someone can establish themselves and go maybe with a more of a full offensive type scenario by putting Mario in there next to Whiteside?
I think, assuming that everyone is available on Monday, you'll see Tolliver slide back into that starting power forward spot, and I don't think it'll be as positional. Stotts was very, very intentional with his subs against the Philadelphia when they were shorthanded without Whiteside and Collins. He basically played Tolliver every minute that Al Horford was on the floor and Hezonja every minute that Ben Simmons was on the floor, and then you used Scalabissier and Kent Bazemore interchangeably when those guys sat, he would sub them at those spots. But I do think Stotts prefers Tolliver. I think he trusts the veteran. He likes that spot. He's literally the only power forward on the roster, so he's going to be the guy who starts at power forward. But I do think we'll see more of Mario Hezonja. He's had a little bit of a rocky start. He hasn't really figured out how to play half-court basketball with this team yet. In the open floor, he looks okay, but when it's four defenders with their eyes on him, he has struggled a little bit.
What do you make of the Hassan Whiteside era at center? He missed last game with a knee problem, but how has he fit in with this Blazers team? How has he looked in the six games so far?
You know, he's been okay. He doesn't play at the end of games, which I think is kind of problematic. He has closed out one of their. He's been, of the five games he was available for, the other four he sat at crunch time because the Blazers, particularly just Terry Stotts, couldn't trust him defensively with how things have worked down the stretch. I think that's pretty problematic. It's hard for me to imagine that he can be one of their best five players if he can't play at the end of games. He's been fine. Their defense is fine, but he has not been a game changer.
I think it's fair to say that's sort of what he was doing during the late stretches of his Miami career, just being in there playing. He's only averaging 25 minutes a game. They're going to need more out of him. I guess with Collins out for so long, he's going to need to step up in that type of situation. One guy who hasn't been a letdown so far, of course, is Damian Lillard, averaging almost 30 points a game and 8 assists. But it is hard. He's playing 38 minutes a night, and that's probably not going to be able to sustain because his backcourt teammate, there's been some fluctuations with CJ McCollum. How was McCollum's season looking? Looked so far, what can he do better to get this team back on track?
CJ is what he is. He's a scorer. He doesn't do a lot of other things. So on nights when he is not scoring well, he'll just be quiet. He'll have a lot of he'll just have games that are frustrating. He took 15 shots to score 16 points last night, took 22 shots to score 22 points against OKC. You know, he's had some big games. He had a huge game against Dallas and kept the Blazers in it. He had a pretty big game against San Antonio early, and the Blazers could have won that game if they didn't totally punt away the second quarter. But he doesn't do a lot of other stuff. So on nights where CJ's shot isn't falling, and we've seen maybe half the games that has been the case so far, he doesn't make a major impact.
Yeah, and that is a problem, and that's been a criticism of McCollum, is he can get hot, he can score, but when that doesn't fall, then the other things tend to fall away by the wayside, and he does struggle in that area. And I guess part of the problem that looked not necessarily obvious, but looked like it's something that could be a problem for this Blazers team, is that adding someone like Rodney Hood into that starting lineup has the similar sort of problems. If the shot doesn't fall, then what else is he doing? How has Hood looked so far? Who is playing a lot of minutes, more minutes than he played last season, but he's been a little bit up and down as well in that area.
Yeah, Rodney Hood probably played better in 4 playoff games than he did actually down the stretch for the Blazers, yep. Which kind of inflated people's perception of him. He was just really good against the Denver Nuggets in the playoffs. But he's been a little bit up and down. You know, I think he's probably played some of his best basketball over the last 3 games than he had early in the season when he was just kind of floating around and not doing a bunch. He was great early against Philly. He had 20 in the first half. It's just he's a guy who's you know, like you said, he's a lot like CJ. He's an offensive guy. At least he's 6'9". I'll give it to him. And he's been shooting okay. He's making his threes. So he's helping space the floor, which is really what they sort of traded away their other wings for, was the idea that someone who could make shots. So he's checking that box for him.
One last thing before you go, Mike. We know that reinforcements aren't coming. Like, Jusuf Nurkić may not be back at all this regular season. Zach Collins, maybe we're looking at All-Star break. So these are two guys who we can't rely on them to come back and have an impact. So internally, look, what needs to happen with this squad to get them back on track to push not only for a home court advantage in the first round, but to get into the playoffs? How do they turn this around, given that there is no cavalry coming?
I'm going to say some crazy things here, okay?
All right, here we go.
Because the Blazers' internal roster is tough. They need Scalabissiere to play awesome.
Yep, fair
enough. That's the reality.
And he's
been
good.
They need Scal to...
I think he's been good.
He's been good. Yeah, he's been good. And they need him to be really... They need him like 25 minutes a night to be a really good backup center. They need Anthony Tolliver to start making some threes and providing positives. They need Anfernee Simons to be a guy who can score 15 a night off the bench and let Dame and CJ sit so they don't have to play 40 minutes, because that's what they're pushing each and every night when they're going for a win. And they need Mario Hezonja to figure it out. The Blazers season somehow rests squarely in the hands of Labissiere and Mario Hezonja, which is quite a sentence at this point in the season.
Yeah, and that is going to make it, especially in this Western Conference, where it is tough to get wins on a nightly basis, relying upon those two guys who have been inconsistent at best throughout their NBA career, is a terrifying thought. But Blazers fans have got their heart in their mouth each game to try and see how this all goes down. Mike, you'll have it all covered for us over on Locked On Blazers, and hopefully for your sake and Blazers fans' sake, things can get back on track.
Oh, I love the chaos. I'm here for it. I'll be recording episodes regardless.
Now it's time to bring in the host of the Locked On Raptors podcast. Sean Woodley is with me. This Raptors team started out the new season as reigning champions, but without Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, they're 4-2. Sean, and now, how have you seen the beginning of this season for Toronto?
It's been fun, man. This is a team that just seems to really, really knows what it is and is comfortable in its own skin. I mean, going through what they went through in the postseason last year, it'd be impossible for them not to come out with just sort of a greater understanding of what it takes to win games. And even in their losses, I mean, we saw the game against the Bucks on Saturday. That was sort of their first really, really big test, and they lost it, but they went down huge early on. You know, they couldn't hit a damn shot to save their lives. And then over the course of the game, they just slowly chipped away, slowly sort of just got themselves back into it, with Kyle Lowry having himself a vintage Kyle Lowry game. And I think we're going to see that a lot this season. I don't think they're going to blow a ton of teams out per se, but they're just going to be in every single game, even if they're down early, just because they know exactly what it takes to win games. It's so overstated and overused, but like, you don't underestimate the heart of a champion. But this is a thing that has been proven to be true, I think, with teams like this Raptors team, even without Kawhi Leonard and their championship ceiling. This is just a team that knows exactly what it takes to win games, and it's been a really fun early start to the season to watch them sort of put it all together with a new star player in Pascal Siakam emerging and having all of that to sort of dig into as well.
Siakam was the guy that I wanted to talk to you about next. He's upped his usage significantly, 32% usage. He's averaging 26-9, hitting over 2 threes a game. The playmaking's improved. Some of that efficiency, which took a big step forward last season, has dropped off. He is hitting 96% of his free throws, so looking pretty good from the line there. But what's been the most impressive part of what you've seen Siakam, who you know, took that big step forward last year, but now is into a new role, a more stressful role, a more important role, and seems to be thriving in that role as well?
Yeah, I think it's the way he's completely changed his touch chart. He, you know, last season, a lot of it was on cuts. It was in transition. It was catch and shoot threes in the corner. And it was sort of taking advantage of the soft areas that having a guy like Kawhi Leonard created for him to sort of seep into and be opportunistic. This season, it's not that at all. This season, he's running pick and roll. This season, he's running like a ton of post-ups. He's, you know, he's taking most of his threes from above the break, and some of it's off the dribble. And it's been really, really cool to see him take on that brand new set of responsibilities as the number one option and see his efficiency carry over pretty impressively. I mean, he had a pretty bad performance against the Bucks. He struggled with foul trouble. That's been a real thing. That's been a problem in pretty much every game so far this season, save for one or two. And he fouled out against Milwaukee and was just 7 of 19, and Giannis gave him a lot of trouble. But you know, you can still see him really sort of being comfortable with what he's doing. He had that great third quarter. He scored 19 points against the Pistons earlier this week, made a couple of their defenders look like they shouldn't even be on an NBA floor. And we're gonna see that. You know, I think his efficiency is transferred over to a degree that I didn't expect. He's at about 60% true shooting right now with the, you know, seriously enhanced usage and the way different collection of shots that he's putting up, shots that typically are going to, you know, yield a lower percentage, you know, a lower point per possession at least. And so but he's done it so well. He seems so comfortable and just seems to be learning every single time he's out there. And, you know, maybe having Siakam as your best player is, you know, something well below what Kawhi Leonard as your best player could get you. But it's still been a treat to watch him sort of, you know, come into this new role and really not struggle with it outside of one game or a couple quarters here and there.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. The other guy who's been awesome, of course, is Kyle Lowry, averaging 24 points a game and 7 assists, but I have some significant concerns with Lowry. Sean, he is playing 39 minutes a game. Like, the guy is 34 years of age. We have seen in the past when Dwayne Casey was pushing him to 37 a night that he would often have injury problems through February, March, and struggle in those you know, early portions of the playoffs and tend to wear down, which, you know, makes sense when you're playing this load. Nurse has been really reticent to use lots of his bench players. How much of a concern is that, just this huge taxing load that Lowry is carrying? And it's not like they can give these extra minutes to Van Vliet because he's playing 38 himself. So how concerning is this?
I am not yet, you know, sounding any alarms. It's obviously not great. You don't want him playing that many minutes. You don't have to tell me how many he's playing because it's something you look at every single game and it's like, I thought that was going to be the game maybe where they scaled him back. And so, yes, it's definitely concerning 6 games in, but I'm going to give Nick Nurse the benefit of the doubt here. He has seen the benefits of keeping Kyle Lowry fresh the last 2 seasons when he was the assistant coach in 2017-18, where he was fresh for most of the year and was excellent and really sort of carried it over into the postseason, even though they lost to the Cavs in round two. And then last year, they kept him fresh as well, and he was great to the point of scoring 26 points in the finals clinching game. And so he knows the benefits. He knows the risks of playing him too many minutes. And I think it's just kind of a byproduct of a couple things right now. First of all, they're starting Fred VanVleet, which, while I get as sort of a way to get your best players all on the floor at the same time, I do think we might see a switch back where Fred starts to sort of run the bench unit and come off the bench. It just makes it more easy to traditionally run that point guard rotation and have those guys, you know, just sort of complement each other as opposed to always playing together. They're going to close games together most nights, but I think Nick Nurse has to figure out a way to manage that rotation a little bit between the two point guards to just have one point guard on the floor more often throughout the game. And so I think we'll see a switch there, whether it's Norman Powell, whether it's somebody else getting in there, whether they start playing big with OG at the two, I'm not sure, but it's got to change at some point there. The other thing too is the Raptors had a pretty easy start to the schedule, and Kyle Lowry only played one preseason game coming back from the thumb injury, and I'm wondering if maybe the Raptors used this early part of the schedule, their first 7 or so games with only a couple tough tests in there and a pretty home-heavy schedule, to sort of have this be an extended preseason essentially and get Kyle's conditioning up and stuff like that. They go on a big road trip starting on this coming Thursday. They play New Orleans, and they go out, play 2 against LA, back-to-back against the Clippers and Lakers, and then they have the Blazers Blazers and I believe the Mavericks on a trip that's coming up. That's going to be a really tough and taxing trip, and I would imagine we're going to see the rotation get a little bit deeper then. I think Terrence Davis is going to get some run. I think Patrick McCaw is going to get more run. I think we'll see even Matt Thomas and Chris Boucher. They've already started to pick up more minutes in the last couple games here. I think we'll just see that continue, and I don't think Nick Nurse is going to go with this crazy top seven heavy rotation, Mike D'Antoni playoff style all season long. It's unsustainable, and I think Nurse knows that. I think this is probably just a way of banking some wins before a tough road trip and also getting some guys back up to the level of conditioning that they maybe didn't have the chance to get to during a sort of shortened and weird preseason with, you know, the recovery from injuries and also a trip to Japan where it was a little bit sort of wonky and not at all what they're used to when it comes to the preseason.
Yeah, that preseason stuff about Lowry not playing is interesting, and we'll see how that, I guess, pans out over the next couple of weeks if they do start to drop his minutes back. But it's obvious that Nurse has very limited trust in those bench guys that they signed, Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and even holdovers like Chris Boucher, who's only getting very limited minutes and could be in there to just assist some of these guys. But it has been a pretty strong start for this Raptors squad, 4-2 at this point. Sean will have it all covered for us over on Locked On Raptors. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me, man.
And that will do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you're subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on Stitcher. Give us a 5-star rating and review, and check out the other shows right across the Locked On Podcast Network. You can follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.